This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Mr. Badish, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How's everything out in your neck of the woods?
Just well, just well. Aren't you glad you went to a school that had a non-controversial mascot?
Yes, a Saluki, an Egyptian hunting dog.
Yeah, and I went to one.
Skinny little runts, too.
Yes, I went to one where the mascot is either an alcoholic beverage or a trained craftsman, a boilermaker. But did you hear last night they had the they had their homecoming parade, I believe, at the University of Illinois, and there were anti-Chief Illiniwek protesters who stopped the parade, blocked the parade.
Wow.
I thought the chief was gone anyway.
He is, as far as I know.
As far as university
functions. There is no mass physical mascot.
Yeah.
But I don't, and they've changed their name, the nickname.
Long live the chief.
Yeah. Apparently
in the minds of protesters, he's still very much alive.
Mm.
Thank you, sir. We'll check in with you. The headlines coming up here at 5:30 on The Morning Show. Max Armstrong with you this morning indeed. And it's because Mr. Samuelson is in Indianapolis, in the Hoosier capital city. He's not alone, to be sure. This portion of the Saturday Morning Show brought to you by the folks at Wink Products Company. Big O checks in.
Well, good morning, Max. A rainy night in Indianapolis, but it didn't dampen the spirit of the 64,000 members of the National FFA organization that have taken over this city ever since last Sunday. But it will come to an end this afternoon at 4 o'clock when the FFA voting members choose the National FFA officer team for the next 12 months. That will conclude the convention, and all of these members will begin leaving town, heading for cities from coast to coast. For me, the highlight always, the Star Farmers. And that happened on Thursday night, and we go through the four star farmers that were named. Star Farmer in Agriculture Placement was Kelly Eink. And as a youngster, she found horsepower and torque far more interesting than playing dress-up. And the citizen of Paulina, Iowa, fascination with engine mechanics eventually led her to take agriculture and power in addition to some of the other courses she has taken for FFA. Kelly Eink of Iowa, the star in agricultural placement. And now moving on to the star in agribusiness. Since the invention of the push mower, cutting the grass represented a rite of passage for many kids. The only difference for Austin Nordic was that his mower's puttering speed propelled him to find a faster way to get the job done. And in 2012, he launched Austin Nordic's Lawn Care Service, currently serving a healthy customer base in southwestern Kansas. The star in agri-science, well, Krista Beck, since third grade from Archbold, Ohio, has raised broilers and layers to sell meat and egg products to local customers. As she got older and joined FFA, she developed a supervised agricultural experience that would look into the health of poultry. She's carrying that on into a career. And then the American Star Farmer. He's from Minnesota, from Holloway, Minnesota. And his name is Arnold. He joined FFA and began learning even more about the industry through classes. So Joseph Arnold is going on to a career in active agriculture and production, and he is producing beans and other produce. As a result, his operation is yielding corn, soybeans, navy beans, kidney beans, and sugar beets, and all of that is happening in Holloway, Minnesota. The $2.7 million in scholarships awarded at this year's convention, coming from individuals, coming from corporate, coming from state FFA associations. And once again this week, the FFA National Foundation set another record in annual production of funding to provide scholarships and the FFA programs. $7.3 million coming from state FFA associations, another $18.5 million national FFA food and national providing the $25.8 million coming from other contributors, including you, Max. You're on the list in the program. 653,000 student members, 244,239 alumni members. And last night, the National FFA Band and the National FFA Chorus presented their annual concert to the members of the FFA. And interestingly enough, the conductors, the husband and wife team, the LaJoys, are retiring at the end of the convention today. And so who will replace them? Well, the daughter of Mrs. LaJoy will replace the choir chorus director and the assistant band director to Mr. LaJoy, who is the band leader and has been of the FFA band, will be replaced by his assistant band director. So the tradition will go on of providing tremendous concert music by the band and chorus during the Outlook. And the other positive from this FFA convention for Indianapolis, for 2 days this week, the members in this city have conducted days of service where they go throughout the city to pre-assigned areas in city parks and homeless shelters to help clean them up and make them livable for the people in the city. They are indeed living to serve. The National FFA Convention is going to be held here in Indianapolis for the next 7 years. And the city and the FFA, I think, have a love affair. They're both very pleased with what goes on during this FFA convention. The restaurants particularly, and well, the cabs and Uber too, enjoying the income that is being held here by the FFA members. They travel throughout the area in the Indianapolis area to get to judging competitions and various program functions of the FFA. So all in all, it has been a great week. Next week, we'll talk every day about the stories of the stars over America. And at about 4 o'clock this afternoon, the convention will come to an end with the election and the introduction of the National FFA officer team. Always look forward to, and they whittled the large number of applications for a national officer position. They whittled it down to 24 people on Wednesday. And today we will all learn at about 4:30 the names of the National Officer FFA team for 2017-2018. And fun as always, Max, it's my battery charging week of the year. And boy, it hasn't slowed down and it hasn't failed me. Orion reporting from Indianapolis. Have a great day.
Corn and soybean growers, we invite you to come and learn how to turn practical data and technology into profitable decisions at the second annual Ag Data Conference. It'll be going on at Coralville, Iowa, coming up the end of November. Making sense of precision technology and the data layers derived from it are key to improving your corn and soybean return on investment. And the best way to learn is from actual experience of other farmers and their advisors, along with a hands-on look at the data products, the drones, and the services that drive success. You'll gain insight and more from the Ag Data Conference, designed by the editors of Farm Progress Information brands, Corn Soybean Digest, and Farm Futures. Get all of the information of the Ag Data Conference by going to the website, theagdataconference.com. It's November 29th and 30th at the Coralville Marriott Hotel near Iowa City, Iowa. The AgDataConference.com. 21 after 5 with a Saturday morning show from WGN Radio. A little bit of sleet reported, I guess, in the Rochelle area over the past hour. Some light precip. Well, the heavier stuff is over to the east through Ohio and eastern Indiana. But we're in the 30s this morning. Temperatures in the upper 30s. 33 out of the Rockford area. 33 up at Madison, Wisconsin. 38 at South Bend. Some interesting advice shared to farmers, but it could also to apply, I think, to many of us in other businesses. Shared by a retiring agriculture economist, and I looked over this the other day, and I thought, man, there's so much in this that people could take away from this, and I tweeted it. You can find it on my Twitter account at Max Armstrong, but it was from Danny Kleinfelder. I'd been on the program with Danny a couple of times. He grew up on a farm in central Illinois, graduated from the University of Illinois. He had been at Texas A&M for, I think, over 30 years as an agriculture economist. And he turned 70 this year and retired from A&M. But on his way out the door, he shared some advice in a column that he wrote called Farewell, It's Been an Interesting Ride. And I had moderated a couple of programs with Danny through the years, and so I thought, well, let me read what he had to say here. And there's some very good stuff in it. And as I say, not just for farmers. Let me highlight a little bit of what he had to say. One piece of advice he offered was relish change. It's ongoing, whether you like it or not. And it presents opportunities for those who embrace it. I've said that in my speeches for many, many years. We need to learn from the past. But it's behind us, Danny says. Tomorrow, today will be the past. What did you learn from it? Here's some more advice he offers to farmers. The 5% rule. A 5% increase in price received for what you grow. A 5% decrease in costs for what you need to produce your crop. And a 5% increase in the yield of your crop will often produce more than a 100% increase in net returns. He says the effect is cumulative, multiplicative, and compounding. Danny Kleinfelder also said, the management of your business has to continuously improve at the rate set by the leading edge of your competition. Otherwise, you'll be falling behind, even if you are moving ahead. Kleinfelder also said the future will always belong to those who see and act on the possibilities before they become obvious to the average producer. Here's some good advice, and I don't care what business you're in. People are your most important asset, so delegate. Require accountability. Reward the high performers. Provide the opportunity for development training. And, he said, get rid of the problems. They are contagious. Dr. Kleinfelder also said, spend time determining the traits you need in a successor and create a plan to test and develop them. Don't just assume that the oldest son or child has the right skills, talents, or vision to lead the business into the future. One more piece of advice from Dr. Danny Kleinfelder, Texas A&M University, recently retired. He says, join a peer advisory group made up of top people who give you honest feedback, offer alternatives, and challenge your thinking. When you go into a peer group meeting, leave your ego at the door. And don't assume that there aren't a lot of things you need to improve on. Oh, yeah, one more thing. He said, don't assume you're doing things as well as you can in your business. Remember, Tom Peters said, if it's not broken, you haven't looked hard enough. Isn't that great advice? Whether you're talking about the business of farming or maybe the business of your hardware chain or your business of your shoe stores or your business of consulting in some way. I put it on Twitter, my Twitter account, Twitter at Max Armstrong. Are you out there in the Twitterverse? Huh? Are you doing that? I tell you what, if you're not, you're missing a lot of good stuff. I really believe that. There is just so much good information out there. There's a lot to learn by following the right people on Twitter. That's the key. And it doesn't have to do anything with politics. I mean, you can stay out of all that mess. There are a lot of people inspirational you can follow, depending on where you derive your inspiration. Franklin Graham, the son of evangelist Billy Graham, posts favorite Bible verses each day. whatever your vocation or avocation, you can find people whose tweets you might want to follow out there. Grain marketist Arlen Suderman, a friend of mine with INTLFC Stone, is a fellow that I follow. There are quite a few folks in the Chicago trading community that I follow. You know, Chad Colby, the ag technology buddy of ours from down in central Illinois, he tweets very actively. And when you go onto Twitter, you don't have to send out tweets. I mean, you can even sign up under an assumed name and just watch what others put out there. But the key is who you follow. Be picky about that. You don't have to follow too many people. You know, set up what I call a basket of people you want to follow, 10 or 12 or 15, who are really expert in your particular area of interest, whether, as I said, it's a vocation or an avocation. And there's a lot of stuff that you can learn. Please follow me if you care to at Max Armstrong on Twitter. More coming up on the Saturday Morning Show. Good neighbors mean a lot, don't they?
Yep.
To have good neighbors, somebody who can step in and help with something when you need help.
Well, that's very true.
And this time of the year, we will see it very often on farms. When someone has had an accident or there's been a death in the family and the crop has to be harvested, mm-hmm. the neighbors come running. And it's really interesting to observe. I've watched this, well, I don't know, for well over 40 years, and I've personally witnessed it. But I really think it happens somewhere nearly every day during the harvest season here in the Midwest. And this past week, it happened at Decatur, Nebraska. A couple of months ago, farmer Joe Penny was riding his motorcycle in South Dakota, and he hit a deer crossing the road. Mm. And Joe died in that crash. But this week, more than three dozen people showed up there. They brought in 10 combines. They brought in auger wagons and something like 20 semi-trucks. And they harvested Joe's crop, a big portion of it. They're not all done, but the neighbors will come back another day. They went in and harvested the soybeans. I think they did it in about 3 hours. They moved in like an army.
Mm.
In fact, I did post on my Twitter account a photograph of those combines in the field. 10, in this case, 10 green combines moving through the field. And it was an aerial shot by drone. It's a very cool photo. But Joe's daughter standing there witnessing it, Jenny is her name, said it was so moving. It really brought home how much Dad meant to people. Yeah. And the common comment that you will hear from a farmer participating in something like this is, yep, he would have done it for us. Yep, but for the grace of God, I could be here too, and all of these folks would help me. So, yeah, it's still alive and well. Despite the very competitive nature of agriculture these days, farmers do help each other in a time of need like this.
Yeah, definitely. You know, my wife is from Galesburg, and her family has farmland out there near Galesburg, and the same thing happened. Her aunt had passed away, and her sons had been helping out, take care of her farm and their farm. But when she passed away, the neighbors came in and helped them harvest that one year. And you're right. A neighbor is always there to help out.
Appreciate it, sir. Take care and have a good weekend, Roger.
God bless, sir.
Yeah. Roger Badish in the WGN newsroom. We'll talk about that book on corn pickers. You can get information on it at the website cornpickerbook.com, but I'm really going to tell you about it visiting with the authors next on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, it's not your average book. I will tell you that right at the outset. It's an amazing history book of agriculture history, the development of the corn picker. And Bob and Phyllis Johnson from Sycamore, Illinois, joining me in the studio this weekend to talk about their book, Corn Pickers and the Inventors Who Dreamed Them Up. Is that right?
That is correct.
Phyllis, let me point out to begin with, you have a writing background.
Yes, I do.
In the newspaper business, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, 10 years.
And your husband has an unbelievable passion for the old equipment, the old corn pickers. Bob, how did that start for you?
You know, I'm not even really sure, but about 20 years ago, I've been collecting information on pickers, literature, talking to farmers, trying to get pictures and stories for them. So I've been kidding people that I had it easy. For the last 20 years, I've been gathering the information, but Phyllis had the hard work of taking a year and a half to put into a book form.
A year and a half. I'm amazed that you're able to do it in that amount of time. This is an amazing volume. I mean, I can't use enough adjectives to stress how different this book is. First of all, how many pages and how much does it weigh, Phyllis?
It's 804 pages and 6.5 pounds.
And it is so well done with so many graphics, so many photographs. The content is very thorough. Bob, you pulled together articles. You pulled together various sales pieces that were used for the machinery. Where did you get all of this? Was it just part of your collection that you had put together over all of the years before you even thought about doing a book?
Actually, I bought a picker years ago that my dad had at one time. And I enjoyed having that picker. I enjoyed using it. And then it got me collecting other pickers and at the same time collecting the literature. And then Phyllis kidded me through another story that I should put a book together on corn pickers. So that's when I really worked hard to gather the literature, stories from farmers, and it's been going on for the last 20 or more years.
How many pickers do you have all together in your personal collection?
25 corn pickers.
25. Is that about it? I mean, are there some missing that you hope to acquire someday?
Well, we're just talking about that on the way here. There are some really old pickers we would love to have called the Baird, Goodhue, Independent. Those are some of the really early pickers we would love to have. Of course, there's the McCormick Deering out there. You know, you have to give them credit for the first successful picker. But I really love to get some of these really oddball pickers. We just met somebody in Wisconsin who has a 1919 Appleton corn picker, a very rare corn picker.
We tend to think of the big companies. We tend to think of McCormick, International Harvester, Deer, New Idea, was quite a manufacturer of pickers that were used for a long, long time. I mean, well after others, I think, were retired, New Idea pickers were still out in the field.
Very popular picker. Very popular.
In fact, a quick story. When we travel around the country, Phyllis kids me that I have too many corn pickers, but she's always good about pointing out a picker in the distance because you see the elevator sticking up. And I'll bet you 9 times out of 10, it's a New Idea picker.
You know, it is interesting to see how it changed, how this piece of equipment changed the landscape of U.S. agriculture. And I guess I touched on that a little bit in the foreword of your book. And let me just say right at the outset, it was a privilege for me to write the foreword. I'm not sure I was on target necessarily with it, but it was a personal recollection of the time and the fact that my father picked corn as a teenager with that husking peg on his hand. So he saw this transition take place into the mechanization, and it made a huge difference, did it not, on the farms of the United States when we had the mechanical picker coming on the scene?
It definitely did. It made the seed corn hybrid breeders work to make a corn that was successful with the corn picker because they needed certain traits, and they also made it more popular on the farms.
So there were ramifications throughout the industry, all across the country. How many companies were there, Bob, that made corn pickers? Any idea?
You know, I just realized that we were going to get a final count. It's so many you wouldn't believe. Like tractors, you know, there's been so many tractors of companies out there, but so many didn't make it. So the same with corn pickers.
What do you think the universe would be, 25, 50?
Were there 100? I would say it's got to be 50, the 50s, yeah. I think we counted it was around the 50 someplace.
Mm-hmm. What about some of the interesting stories that turned up about the people, their successes, their failures? Anything come to mind at the moment, Phyllis?
Each one built on the successes of the last one. It all worked together like the cogs on a wheel. And maybe they didn't create a more successful picker than the last one, but at least they tried. And we've been able to contact some people, descendants of these engineers, and they're so thrilled that we are able to put their stories out.
That had to require some detective work to track those folks down.
Mm-hmm. I love genealogy, and I used a genealogy website to find them and get pictures. And
how can folks get a copy in the weeks ahead? Somebody might want to get one for somebody who is very special for Christmas. I would point out that the book is the price is more than $100.
Yes, it is.
But I have never seen a volume as thorough as this book on any particular subject. It is so detailed, and I want to congratulate you both on that, but how would someone get a book?
The best way is go to our website, which is cornpickerbook.com. All the information is in there, including my phone number. If you want to call me and talk to me, I'll gladly talk to you about pickers or if you need more information about the book.
And the total cost, including shipping, would be approximately what?
The total cost with shipping is $140.
Okay.
I know that sounds a little high, but we went to a local printer. It's printed on good quality paper. The cover is laminated, and talked to several people, and you know, at first they look at the book and they said, "Gee, that price seems a little high," but most of those people have come back to us and said, in fact, I just got a message on the phone the other day and said, you know, I hesitated, but it's well worth the money.
Through the course of the winter, I look forward to getting real cozy with my volume, but I've got to be careful. I have to be careful. If I fall asleep holding that book over my head, that could be dangerous. Thanks for coming in. Good to talk to you both.
Thank you, Max.
11 before 6 on the Saturday morning show from WGN Radio. Max Armstrong here with you this morning as Big O is still in Indianapolis, as he reported in a little bit earlier. And if you're wanting to catch up on that corn picker book, again, Bob and Phyllis Johnson talking with me about it. That website they have is cornpickerbook.com for that volume. It weighs 6.5 pounds, 800 pages. It is hefty. Everything you want to know about the corn picker. Well, we've got some catching up to do. I talked about that this week with market analyst John Zanker, J.C. Zanker and Company, Lafayette, Indiana.
John, we're behind at the corn harvest. We saw last weekend we were behind, what, 21 percentage points or something like that behind average? Quite a ways behind the average pace. That was last weekend. What now do you see?
We're going to make up some ground here in the western corn belt, especially. We've gotten bogged down here in the east again a little bit from, say, central Illinois east. So not going to make a lot of progress here in the east. But overall, I think we're going to stay short of average. But we're going to pick up maybe 5 points on the pace.
That western area, Nebraska, the Dakotas, it was a slow start there. They had very wet fields as the harvest season began, and now that they have the opportunity, they're really trying to catch up quickly?
Oh, yeah. They're hitting it really hard. My hometown's out in that area, so everybody's excited to finally get a chance to get in there and be able to work more in a day or two without being interrupted by the rains. And the forecast looks pretty good. I'd say for the next 10 days, they're in pretty good shape out there.
We've heard reports of some corn being stored out on the ground already. Is it your feeling we'll see more of that?
Oh, absolutely. We saw ground piles before harvest started. We had to get some of that old crop corn out of the bins to make room for the new, and we're going to see a lot of corn on the ground this year.
Open storage is somewhat routine for many elevators, is it not? I know some elevator operators who say, you know, it's the last thing I want to do is put it out there in that area, and yet there are others who routinely will store outside and tarp it through the winter.
Well, these elevator managers have become pretty astute at putting corn on the ground and keeping it in good shape, and the facilities have gotten better in the last 20 years, so they're awfully good at what they do, and I don't think that's going to be a big issue. We're going to put a lot of corn on the ground, and it's going to stay there for a while. There's good carry in the market, so you'll see a lot of that corn carried into the spring and even summer.
Farmers, too, have become pretty astute at storing in many instances as well, haven't they? Storing and then marketing accordingly.
Yes, we've added a lot of on-farm space, and I think farmers have certainly become astute at using that carry, and with these prices where they are right now, and 30 cents carry into July, we're going to see a lot of corn stored into the summer this year.
Carry in the market, why is it so significant at this point?
Well, we just with that old crop carryout, we've got plenty of corn, and now we have a slow export pace, so we've got a carryout that was the largest stocks to usage ratio in the past 10 years, and we're coming back with another one that's a little bit bigger than that one. So we have plenty of corn, Max.
We are really watching the Southern Hemisphere to see what goes on down there in terms of, first of all, the soybean crop, and then also we'll be paying attention to the corn crop, that what is it they call the Safrina crop that will follow the soybeans down there.
Yes. Well, we saw a big market rally coming out of the 16 crop down there, and that was the first good rally we'd seen in a while. I think maybe going all the way back to 2005. So it was give us $2.50 on the soybean market from a wet Argentine harvest, and then the problems that we saw with the Safrina crop in Brazil give us a pretty good boost on corn. So we're going to be keeping a real close eye on that. We're going to need that to push corn prices much higher.
So there might be that opportunity for prices to climb a little bit. Some people say, and we've charted this over the years, that we hit the lows typically in this time of the year, in that September-October time frame. Is that accurate?
That's pretty accurate over a long period of time. It's been a little bit different here the last few years, as most things have been. But I would say that the bean market in particular is poised for a nice little bounce in here. We've got to keep that North Korean / China situation in the back of our minds here. We can't afford any kind of trouble over there. It's going to be pretty devastating to prices. So I don't think there's high odds of that, but it's something we need to be concerned about.
It has not been dominant on the front pages in recent days, yet we know that guy is still over there with the potential to cause problems, and there could be a ripple effect from that, you're saying.
Well, it'd be a big ripple, and I think if we're going to look at it as if we have some decent opportunities here to price some beans, we're going to be pretty aggressive early on.
John Zanker, J.C. Zanker and Company, Lafayette, Indiana. And speaking of prices on beans, they gained a little bit yesterday. November soybeans ended the week 4 cents a bushel higher at 9.75 1/4. November beans up 3.5 cents to 9.97 1/4. Corn moved the other way. The December corn down 1 3/4. 3.48 3/4. $3.48 3/4 a bushel. And the December corn was down 1 3/4 to 3.94 1/2. The wheat market down yesterday. December wheat off 4.5 cents to 4.27 1/4. The Illinois Farm Bureau has reached out to the governor asking for a special emergency declaration during the harvest season. We want to enable farmers, as they're struggling to get out this crop, to load the trucks a little heavier. This declaration, and this was written into legislation. This is a fairly recent piece of legislation, I believe, signed at the Illinois State Fair. And the governor may declare a harvest season emergency in the window from September 31st to December 31st. And it would give road jurisdictions the authority to issue permits for up to 10% more than the gross vehicle weight and axle weight limits on their respective roads. So this is action that could be taken, and the Illinois Farm Bureau has reached out to the governor, I think just in the past 24 hours, asking for this special declaration because the harvest is running so late, because the cost of doing business are so high, and because the prices received for the commodities are so low. It's put a lot of pressure on farmers, to be sure. You don't want to be outside the loop, but yes, you do want to be outside the loop. And Mike Steven will be along momentarily here on WGN Radio. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, engineer. Thanks to the Big O for checking in from Indianapolis. Max Armstrong here on the Saturday Morning Show. See you next Saturday about this time. Mr. Steven, how's the little rascal at your house, the new little rascal?
I'll tell you, he is healthy and happy and sleeping during the day.
Well, hey, it goes with the turf, pal.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's funny. I put this out on my Twitter account, but my wife Jenny and I, we saw you the day that baby Joey was born.
It was so cool to just run into you at breakfast. I was waiting on our daughter Lisa and her friend Chris, and just to catch you guys on your way there, it was just very neat.
Yeah, no, it was great. We were sitting at that restaurant in the West Loop, and Jenny looks over and she says, "Hey, I think that's Max Armstrong." And I'm like, wait, what?
Sitting there by himself with all of his friends.
And then we went and had a kid.
Yeah. that's the effect I have on people.
That's true.
Stay away from me.
Oh, boy. Check the maternity divorce, everybody. Oh, boy. Max Armstrong. Hey, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Sounding great as always.
Thank you, sir. Take care of yourself. Have a good show.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. There he goes. Legend here at WGN, Max Armstrong.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.